Hey, this is Matt Hawkins, and you're listening to the Top Cow Chronology Project.
Hi guys, Jace here. I just want to apologize for not having very many episodes up last week. Moving from Central California to Phoenix, Arizona, well over 700 miles, plus having to pack up a house where your family's been for over 40 years, was quite an undertaking. So what we have for you on this episode is the first half of a supersized episode that Manny and I recorded talking about WonderCon. Happened last weekend in Anaheim. And then the second half of the episode, which will come out Wednesday, is a little more talk of WonderCon and then just kind of a state of the industry, books that are coming out this summer that Manny and I are looking forward to. So enjoy and be sure and tell your friends and give us some feedback about the podcast. We'd love to hear from you.
Okay, this is Jace from the Comic Source here with my co-host Manny. This is a special episode of the Top Cow Chronology Project. Manny and I both attended WonderCon this last weekend. We're going to talk about that a little bit, and then we're just going to do a little state of the industry, talk a little bit about the issues coming up and series coming up this summer that we're looking forward to. So, what were your initial impressions of WonderCon this year, Manny?
WonderCon was packed, I will say that. And I will say that the biggest thing for me was it was really the absence of DC was really noticeable.
Yeah, I would agree. They open up another section of the Anaheim Convention Center than they had in the past, so everything was a little more spread out. But even so, some of those aisles were pretty crowded.
Oh yeah,
midday on Saturday. But I will agree with you, the absence of DC as a major publisher there was really noticeable. It wasn't just that there wasn't the DC booth there with their usual signings, but, you know, they bring in a lot of talent. And so I just felt there weren't quite as many A-list names, as there usually are. You know, there were a couple top name guys there in Artist Alley, and they were all kind of in the front right there. Todd Knock, Norm Ratman, Dan Juergens.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, that was about it.
Yeah, I know. And then I guess it's not a surprise, but, you know, with as easily as we were able to talk to Babs Tarr at the Long Beach show last year, it was impossible, this show. I mean, she was on the cover and on the t-shirts and on a couple of panels, but holy cow.
Yeah, that's what I told you, you know. I made sure to get a sketch from her at the Long Beach Comic Con because I knew as soon as that book came out, what did I tell? I said, you're looking at the next Amanda Connor.
Yeah.
And her line rivaled an Amanda Connor line. That's how long. I mean, there wasn't a time I walked by that her line was not so long that they had to make a break. You know, like have the line stop here and then restart it and, you know, 10 feet further back so people could walk past in the aisle because, you know, her line was just out of control.
Yeah, and then, I don't know, I just didn't see as many cosplayers as I did last year. I don't know. The last two shows we've been to, it seems like there's a little bit of a decline in cosplay. I don't know. Is it just me, just not really necessarily paying attention?
You know, I saw a lot of cosplay. I think you were inside.
We actually spent quite a bit of time outside because, I mean, with how packed it was, we took a lot of breaks and outside.
All the way outside?
Oh, you know.
Or to in the lobby.
The water fountains.
Oh, okay.
We would go sit there. It didn't seem like as much as the other years.
Well, at Anaheim, that hill that's out there in front of the dome, there's like a hill right there. They hang out, like the majority of them hang out there. Because they use that hill because it's staggered and they take pictures.
Oh, okay.
So, because every time I went back to go to the car, because, you know, I made a couple trips to the car, there were like 50, 80 of them out there all taking pictures together. They'd be like, okay, all the people dressed as anime. And they'd go up there and they'd take pictures. all the heroes, and they were splitting them. All the people wearing pink. I mean, they just picture after picture after picture. So, and then, excuse me, on top of that, you know, I didn't get out of there till a lot later than you. I mean, it took me 30 minutes just to get out of the parking garage.
Man, it took us, we were out there, we were out immediately.
Right? Yeah, there was a huge line. You had to, you know, show your ticket to the lady and then she'd let you out, but it just took forever. But anyway,
I mean, yeah, show I think, a ticket?
Well, see, cause I didn't get to park in that.
Oh, okay.
The Anaheim Convention Center parking because it was full. I had to park down the street at the Garden Parkway, and some of the people there are there for like the restaurants, like Bubba Gump Shrimp and all that.
Oh, okay.
And so they have to show that they got their parking validated or they have to pay.
Oh man, but you parked pretty far.
Yeah, I told you. but if you paid for WonderCon parking, they put you in a different section, but you still have to show your ticket to show that you've already paid for your parking to get out. So every single car that goes up has to hand over a ticket. She looks at it. And then if they have to pay, you have to wait for them to pay. Otherwise, she hits a button and let you out. So, you know. And everybody's trying to leave at once because, you know, WonderCon's done. But anyway, the point I'm getting to is, so I got out of the parking garage. So by this time, it's like, I don't know, 7:45. And I go across the street to the gas station to fill up. I'm there filling up the gas station at the gas station, and I'm probably like 3 or 4 blocks from the convention center, and I just see droves of people walking by in costume. Just really? Droves. Because Saturday night
is the masquerade,
ball. So that could have factored in as well. You know, like we said, same thing at Long Beach Comic Expo. You know, we felt there was a little bit less cosplay, but, you know, maybe they're there on that Saturday working on their costume all day, making sure it's dialed in because they want it perfect for the show, for the masquerade ball that night. And then maybe Sunday they'll actually be at the show.
You know what? You're probably right. Cause I do see a lot more pictures posted on Sunday than Saturday. The one thing we did do, we got there 8:30 and that's when we got in line for, the Gotham signing drawing. And, to me, the way they do it is kind of ridiculous, to be honest with you. I mean, it doesn't matter how early you get there. It doesn't even matter what place in line you are. If you stand in line till, we stood there from 8:30 till about 10 before the line actually started moving. And when we got to the front, everybody gets a chance at the raffle. And, if you get a ticket with the check mark, you're to report to, one of the signing rooms in the afternoon. I didn't get the ticket with the check mark, but my wife did. So, she easily handed me the wristband because she doesn't really like Gotham anyway. And, that's how I got, you know, to meet Ben McKenzie, Robin Lloyd Taylor, and also Corey Michael Smith, otherwise known as, James Gordon, Oswald Cobblepot the Penguin, and Edward Nygma the Future Riddler. So that was pretty cool.
So did she get to go stand in line with you at least?
Yeah, she did get to stand in line, but the first line, because you stand in line in a room, and then they take you out and you stand in line in the other room where they're actually signing. So in order to get an autograph from these guys, you had to literally stand in 3 lines.
Wow.
You know, and so the crappy part is no pictures, no videos, no nothing. Just go in, get your signature, and get out. That's pretty much what it was.
Man, what if you had like a camera concealed on you? Like one of those body cams. You maybe could do something with that footage.
You might be able to get away with that, but I mean, they had people watching the line, which was, I thought was kind of ridiculous. Like, what, you know, what are you really going to do? I mean, you can't sell that picture. I mean, all you're trying to do is, you know, something for, you know, social media or maybe your scrapbook or whatever. But you know, I didn't see why it was so necessary to not even take pictures as you're in line at least.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I mean, I understand not allowing you to take a picture with them because if they let everybody do that, then
it's gonna take forever.
Yeah, gonna take a long time. So I understand that, but I mean, you can't even take a picture. Yeah, I don't really understand. But was it worth it?
Yeah, well, it was, yeah. I have a nice poster, on my wall. It's framed now, and, you know, maybe later I get a chance to meet some of the other cast and I'll get the rest of it signed.
So you said you didn't think that was the best way to do it. How do you think they should do it?
I don't know. It just didn't seem fair to the people who were there since, like, you know, early in the morning. Cause I apparently there were some people who were there pretty early. And, you know, you could be there as early as you want, but, you know, if you don't get the check mark, it doesn't matter.
I understand what you're saying. Like, okay, so say somebody was there at 6 a.m. and they waited all that time and they're not lucky enough to pull a check mark ticket. That sucks for them. They spent, you know, half their day.
Yeah.
And, you know, they got nothing, or, you know, 4 hours, third of their day, whatever, and they got nothing to show for it. That could have been the only reason they wanted to go to the show. So exactly. I understand that. But then at the same time, you want, well, everybody has an equal chance. So there's some inherent fairness in that. Everybody has an equal chance. But you didn't feel so bad for the person that was there at 6 a.m. that you gave your ticket up, right?
No, actually the plan was for us, if we both got it, we were going to give one away.
That's
because, that's you know, it, like you it just said, didn't seem right.
Yeah. She doesn't care about the show.
Yeah. So, they also had a line for, iZombie, which I haven't watched any episodes of, Teen Titans Go, and, Orange is Black, or
Orange is the New Black.
Orphan Black.
Yeah, I saw some people talking about that today, and they were complaining that the main chick, because if you're not familiar with Orphan Black, it's about one girl who's been cloned a bunch of times. I think,
yeah.
And so she actually plays like a couple 75% of the characters she plays. And so she's basically, you know, mm-hmm. It's almost like a one woman show because she plays all these different roles. And she's the main chick, and she wasn't even there.
Oh, wow.
So people were fans of the show are like, how do you do an Orphan Black signing? You can't even get the main. But I don't know. Maybe I think she's British or something. I mean, it's a show on the BBC.
Well, yeah, maybe she's.
So maybe she's, you know.
Well, that was the good thing about the Gotham signing, because on Sunday they had the Flash signing, and it was only the guy who played Cisco, Iris, and, the other girl who's, Cisco's lab partner. I can't remember her name. You know, so it was still a supporting cast. It wasn't even Wells. It wasn't, you know, Grant. And, you know, but when it came to, Gotham, it was James Gordon.
Yeah.
And it was, Alfred Penny, you know, Oswald Cobblepot, which are probably the two most popular characters on there. And, you know, Edward Nygma was the, Corey Michael Smith who plays him. It's my favorite character. And so, you know, I was like, hey, you know, whatever, man. This was probably the best signing of them all.
Yeah. And so they had all the lines at the same time. So basically you had to pick, right?
There was no way to pick. Yeah. And then like, it was annoying because they would say, yeah, if you don't get a ticket, you can go back in line and try again. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get back in this line. It's like, we don't get it. It just doesn't happen. So that was cool that we got it. I had to.
Well, how long was the line still real long when you pulled yours?
We were probably in the middle, and then it went all the way to the back, and they formed a second line.
Wow. So it would have been another couple hours to pull again.
It would have been a while, and I wouldn't have stood there again. I mean, I would have been bummed because
by that time the show had opened.
No, the show had already opened because the show opened half an hour earlier than it was supposed to. It actually flip-flopped on the program. It said they're going to start drawing at 9:30. And the program opens and the show floor opens at 10. Show floor opened at 9:30, and everybody started drawing at 10.
Mm.
So,
yeah, you don't want to wait. I mean, once the show's open, man, I mean,
yeah.
You're not going to stand in line again.
I mean, and at that point when it was, I knew I would have to make a decision. Do I want to go see Babs Tarr, or am I going to go, get this Gotham signing? Because if I don't go right now, as it opens, I'm not going to get it.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then, when it came time to look for her table, it was real easy because you just looked for the longest.
So if you would have beeline to her table, you may have gotten a bad.
Yeah, yeah. If I would have, but
maybe, again. Maybe not. Though. I mean, it might have been an hour and a half you waited for her to get a sketch.
Yeah, I know. But as you know,
I did see her. I mean, even though she had that huge line, I did see her do at least one sketch. And I'm sure she did more than one.
I'm sure she was doing like quick sketches though.
But I can't see her. Well, I was just about to say the one I saw her doing, it was like on a backing board and it was pretty small and she was doing it pretty quick, just with a Sharpie, not,
yeah,
you know, it wasn't even pencil first and then over it. So it's like,
not with that line. There was no way she was going to get that done with that line.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Just one more reason I'm glad I got mine at Long Beach.
I know I should have, but, you know, like I told you, my wife, and everybody else that I tell this damn story, that, you know, the money wasn't there at the time.
Yeah.
But, you know,
Who did you get? You got, who did you get there? You got a Norm Ratman, huh?
No.
Long Beach Comic Con? No.
No, that time it was, Drew Johnson. I got him. Ali V. She did, Zatanna for me.
Yeah.
And,
you got at least one more.
No, I think that was it. Yeah, because, no one's touched my Batman book for a while.
Mm.
Oh, no, I did. Derek Fridolfs did a,
Oh, that's right. And he actually had your book longer than I expected him to, because when I got him the year before, and he did the Hulk for me, he banged it out pretty quick.
Well, I mean, it was pretty quick, but, you know.
So, I guess, looking back on it, considering how many shows Drew Johnson does.
And Derek Fridolfs, because I see him at every show, yeah, too. Mm-hmm. I probably should have just got the Babs-Tarr one, yeah, and then, you know, got those other guys.
Yeah. I know Derek Fridolfs lives in Fresno. He could have just drove down 20
Derek
minutes
down. Derek Fridolfs did, Free Comic Book Day a couple years ago in Fresno, and I'm sure he's going to do it again one of these years. Yeah. So
you could have just drove down the road 20 minutes and got a Babs-Tarr.
No, yeah, that's true. But, talking about Artist Alley, I didn't like the placement this year. Last year they had it, you know, more towards the back. You know,
yeah.
But this year, right as you entered, was Artist Alley, and it was just cluttered with people.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, didn't necessarily. Yeah,
they had it set up where, like, the main entrance that where people would walk in, and so people were, like, they would just walk in and then continue to just walk straight, and they were, you know, would do the walk real slow and, like,
yeah,
look around, and I was, get out of the way!
Yeah.
And another thing, okay, I'm just gonna say this, if you go to shows, a lot of shows, or local shows, or whatever it may be, and you run into people you know, please, 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 do not stop in the middle of the aisle to talk.
Yeah.
It's one of my biggest pet peeves. You run into somebody you know, move to the side. You see these big groups of people, and the aisles are not that big, and they're clogging up in the middle. Oh, that's the thing that irritates me the most.
Yeah, I think.
And that bothers me more than the people stopping to take pictures with the cosplayers.
Oh, no, well, I mean, everybody's taking pictures of cosplayers. I have no problem with that, but I think my wife and I forced our way through a couple of groups. And my wife was like, dang, you know, I was like, no, like, we're in the aisle. We need to go.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, I could definitely see where you're going with that. But I mean, and then they put all of the, I wouldn't say headliners, but more of the heavy hitters towards the back of the, I mean, I guess in this case, it's the back of the Artist Alley or the front, depending on which way you came in. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was like the A row where they had, you know, Todd Knock, Norm Ratman, Dan Jurgens. Yeah, they were all like there right in a row.
Greg Pak was there.
Yeah, Greg Pak was on that side. Cullen Bunn.
King was there as well.
Babs-Tarr. Dustin Nguyen. Who'd you say?
King. Tom King.
Oh, Tom King, yeah. Tom King was on that side. Yeah, so a lot of the more heavy hitters. Then, and they did have a cosplay section in the back. I didn't walk through that part with the actual cosplay groups.
Actually, I don't even think we walked the entire floor.
They were like, their rows were going the other direction, like at a 90 degree angle to the main rows.
Oh, okay.
And they were split like half, like here's the retailer section and here's the small press, and they kind of straddled the two. It did seem like small press was as big as last year, if not bigger. But the only small press, I mean, because I should say that I was in Phoenix. I didn't get to the show until noon.
Yeah, it was a nice surprise to see you there, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I didn't even know that I was going to make it, but I managed to score a pass at the last second. Wasn't even sure if I'd be in the area, but it worked out. So I got there at noon, just in time for the Valiant panel. And so didn't have a lot of time. I hadn't contacted any creators ahead of time about interviews. So as soon as I got there, hit the Valiant panel. Then I went downstairs, talked to a few friends, and then went and set up some interviews with some creators for later in the day. And then I kind of speed walked up and down the aisles, looking for a few of my retailer friends, and then I did see the ladies from Hex Comics in the small press area, and that was the only reason I even went in the small press area, is because I was looking to say hi to them.
Yeah, I was actually looking for them to pick up book number 3.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the digital download's fine, that's how I got 2, but, you know, the artwork is just so good. I really love the artwork on it.
Yeah.
So I wanted to pick up the actual book. You know, they recognized me, you know, pretty quick after talking with them. And I had mentioned that you weren't going to be there and this and that. I guess they're going to be in Phoenix too.
Yeah, they're going to be in Phoenix and San Diego.
So yeah, that's how they knew about, you know, your travel arrangements, your moving and stuff. Yeah. That I already mentioned to them. And, but yeah, I wanted my wife to meet them because I was like, look, it's an all ladies, company, and yeah, they have a great book. And yeah, so it's cool. My goal is to have the complete collection of Hex Comics, and each one is signed by the entire team.
Yeah. So did you pick up 2 and 3?
You know what? I should have, and I didn't.
You forgot to pick up 2, huh?
Maybe, hopefully they're at Long Beach in the fall and I can get 2.
Yeah. I would think they would be
4, 5.
Yeah. When I finally did see them, they're like, Jace, we thought you weren't coming. And I was like, did I tell them I wasn't coming? And then they said, oh, yeah, it was kind of a surprise. I just kind of fell into place and I made it. And they go, yeah, we heard you're moving to Phoenix. And I was like, all right, wait, what? Are you guys stalking me or something? And they're like, no, Manny came by and said, I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. So, yeah, I just said hi real fast, talked to him real quick, and I also got my copy of 3. They asked me if anybody had come up and taken me up on my offer, because for those of you who don't watch my YouTube channel, I recently did a review of Hex Comics. Actually, I should say the title is actually Hex 11, by Hex Comics. And in my review, I said that I stand behind this book so strongly that if you come and find me at a show, I will, and Hex Comics is there, I will take you to their booth and buy you a copy of number 1.
Really? You said that?
I said that.
I think I must have missed that.
And I stand behind that. So, but I didn't advertise or promote the fact that I was going to be at WonderCon where Hex Comics was, because I didn't know I was going to be there until literally the night before at like 9 o'clock. So, but for all of you listening, if you're going to be at Phoenix Comic Con, track me down. Hex Comics will be there. So I will take you over to their booth. I'll introduce you to the creators and I will purchase a copy of issue 1 of Hex 11.
Now, I just want to make that clear. That is his, that only works with Jace. I'm not buying you. I'll take you over to Hex if we happen to be at the same show. I'll introduce you, but I'm not buying you number 1, because I'll probably be buying whichever issue it is they're working on at that time.
Yeah, and actually Lisa said that they are hoping to have issue 4 out in time for Phoenix.
Oh, nice.
That's their goal.
Maybe you can.
I also talked to Lisa. There was a couple things I wanted to know just for my own personal. I've never seen magic illustrated or portrayed in any book the way it is in the Hex 11.
Yeah, that's kind of what has me really hooked. It's just a really good interpretation of magic. Yeah.
And for those of you not familiar or you haven't watched my video review, it looks like circuitry.
Yeah, it does.
Like right away when I first saw it, you know, with the line, all the lines are at angles to each other and there's little circles and there's no curves. They're not all right angles, but they're all angles. And so right away, and it kind of glows, and right away I thought Tron. Oh, that reminds me of Tron. You know, being that Tron was, you know, right in my wheelhouse when I was a kid. I was like 9 or 10 when it came out. So right away I thought, and so I was curious. So I asked Lisa, I said, where'd you come up with that idea? And she was saying that, she kind of got the inspiration for it from the quote from Isaac Asimov. And the quote is that any civilization or society whose technology is sufficiently advanced will appear to a primitive society as magic.
Yeah. Okay.
You know,
that makes sense.
If you went way back to the cavemen and you had like a gun and you know, here they are trying to kill whatever animal for their meat with a rock or a stick or what have you, and you were to shoot that animal from a long distance with a gun, you know, they would think it was magic. So that's where she kind of got the idea for this magic to kind of look to have a technological look to it.
Well, it works for me.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's cool. It looks awesome. And my other question was, when the spellcasters are casting their spells, and it kind of looks like gibberish, I wanted to know if it was just a language that she created, or if it was, there was some kind of meaning behind it. Maybe it was a code of some sort.
You know what? I meant to ask her that, and I didn't.
She said it's actually Icelandic, but she changes some letters around a little bit, because if you're not familiar with any Scandinavian languages, they have some letters that we don't have in our alphabet.
Oh,
and so she changes stuff around, you know, switches some letters out here and there to make it work more phonetically. So she says, you know, she said, for me, you know, Icelandic is such a lyrical language. I just thought that it suited the book very well. And I said, well, look at it this way. If Hex 11 hits it big to the point where, you know, you're selling left and right, you can make a dictionary. She's like, oh, that's actually a really good idea. We could do like a glossary or something. I was like, yeah. So, yeah, it was really great to see Lisa and the rest of the girls, Samantha, Lindley, and Kelly Sue. So, yeah, they're a really great bunch of girls. They said that they had some people that came Friday and had bought issue 1, and they were back on Saturday to get issues 2 and 3.
Oh, nice.
So, again, doing very well at the show. And I think it says a lot, you know, those four are there. It's their book, and they all four were there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like, okay, two of them do this show and two of them do this show. I mean, it's their passion. And, yeah.
You can tell by the book, it's their passion.
Yeah.
It's really good.
It is. I have to admit that when we interviewed them at Long Beach, they seemed very passionate. And in a way, I was really hoping the book was going to be good. I went into it without any expectations, but there was a little tiny bit of worry. You know, they seemed so nice, and you know, I was what if we read this and it's not that good, and you know, I'm going to have to give my honest opinion, but I'm going to play this interview with them. And so, yeah, I mean, just great. I really can't say anything more about how great the book is. I mean, I think the fact that I'm willing to buy an issue 1 for anybody who comes up to me at a convention, you know, that says it all right there.
Mm-hmm.
This book needs to be out there and needs to be read by people. So
yeah, I agree.
In fact, I'm already planning on at San Diego, probably going and buying about, maybe somewhere between 5 and 10 copies of number 1, because there are certain people that I want to make sure read it.
Oh, okay.
Like, I'd love to give a copy to Gail Simone of issue 1.
Okay.
I'd love to give a copy of issue 1 to Nicola Scott. You know, some of the more established female creators in the industry, to let them know that here's this great female-centric company putting out a book at the highest level of quality.
Mm-hmm.
I think they would really, really enjoy it, so.
Great. I'm going to have to give you $5 to get me my number 4 then at Phoenix.
And a number 2?
Yeah, probably number 2 also. I have a feeling this is going to blow up, and then we're going to be happy we were there from the beginning.
Yeah,
and
it would surprise me.
I told you so.
It is a really, really good book.
Yeah, and that's just one booth. My favorite booth of the day, the Valiant booth.
Yeah, like I said, I got there just in time for the Valiant panel. That was the Valiant 25th anniversary panel. And they kind of went over what they have coming up this summer and throughout the rest of the year. Hunter Goranson, one of the main marketing guys at Valiant, kind of led the panel. And then sitting on the panel were Fred Van Lente, a writer of Ivar Timewalker, and then Dinesh Shamdasani, who's the CEO and COO of the company. And then the last guy up there was
Ryan Wynn,
who is the inker on Divinity. And I really, really, really wanted to talk to Fred Van Lente.
Oh.
And I don't know where he went. I never saw him after the panel.
He had his own booth in Artist Alley.
It wasn't next to Greg Pak?
I don't know.
I meant to look that up, and I never did. Because, yeah, he's one of the main guys I wanted to talk to, and I never saw him after that.
Yeah, I saw he was at the table right afterwards signing.
Yeah, I know that, but I had to run back to the car.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
No. By the time I went back to the Valiant panel after that, but he was gone already. Oh, I mean, the Valiant table, but he was gone. Anyway, you were saying the Valiant booth.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, you know, you had different artists and writers just hanging out. Same guys as, you know, some of the other shows that we've been to. And, you know, one of the guys I hadn't seen him before. He was asking me if I read Valiant. And, you know, I really looking back, I read a lot of Valiant ever since you introduced me to Harbinger. That led to Archer and Armstrong and led me to Bloodshot and you know, all the other books that Exo Manowar and, you know, the Valiant, Ninjak. So yeah, a lot of Valiant. And, you know, I was telling him how much I appreciate the books, and he goes, I'm really glad you feel that way. And he hands me a, what would you call it? A foil book?
It's a chromium.
A chromium Armor Hunters number one. I was like, what is this? He goes, yeah, you know, being a great fan, you know, here's a book. And so I was very happily surprised by that. And then, you know, I thanked him, and he was encouraging me to read, Quantum and Woody if I really enjoyed, Archer and Armstrong. I was like, you know, I haven't necessarily given a lot of thought, but, you know, I guess I can give it a try. But what's up with the goat? He goes, you have to read. He goes, you have to read it. I'm not going to tell you. And then I turn around and Dinesh is standing right there, and I've been wanting to meet him for a long time, you know, and so it was great for me to be able to talk with him for a few minutes. And, he was really cool, and he was explaining to me that the goat even has a backstory, a whole issue just about the goat. He goes, and if you don't cry, you know, you don't, apparently it's a very sad story. So once I get to it, I'll be sure to share my emotional experience. But, yeah, it was great. And then a little bit later, I got to talking with Ryan Wynn, and we're talking about Divinity and how he doesn't read the story ahead of time. He kind of reads it as he's working on it. So, you know, he tries to be as surprised as everybody else is, because, you know, they feel really strong. Him and David Baron were telling me about how strong they feel about the storyline of that, and how, you know, it has, you know, there's so much there that you really have to look into it. And, I actually asked him about the watch in number one. I told him, was that on purpose? Or, you know, did they forget something? He goes, look, all I'm telling you is that, you know, everything is there for a purpose. He goes, I noticed the watch also right away. And, you know, if that's the way it was drawn, you know, that's the way I was going to ink it. And, you know, we'll see where that leads to or what that means. And personally, I think that, you know, with the way it's going, it might mean, it may be symbolic for that, you know, time, you know, time doesn't matter to him or something. Because I guess he's able to go back in time and revisit other parts of his life, because I don't know. Now I'm getting into Divinity.
Well, the way it was explained to me was that he's basically can control energy, and at a molecular level. And so due to his ability to manipulate it, he sees all times at, they're all the present for him, so he can basically visit anytime he wants. It's just like stepping into a room.
So is this like, he had pretty much has the powers kind of like Scarlett Johansson did in that one movie a couple months ago? Where she's able to like use 100% of her brain and she can go back and, is that the kind of feeling? Is that the
Lucy?
Lucy, yeah.
I didn't see it, but
I think.
Thanks for ruining Lucy for me, because, you know, I go see a lot of movies. Well, I never go to the movies.
Well, there's nothing to ruin. That's pretty, you know, that's just pretty much what she's able to do. And, you know, she's able to go back in time. She's able to, you know, go forward. She's able to, you know, control energy, because So I'm assuming it's something similar at least. But anyway, the one thing that that Valiant 25th anniversary panel did do for me is get me really excited for the Book of the Dead. Because one thing that Dinesh said that really stood out to me was, in the Valiant universe, dead is dead.
Yeah, he's always said that.
And I mean, some of the images we saw is the fall of Exo Manowar, the fall of Harada, Toya Harada, the fall of who else was it?
Ninjak,
yeah. And you know, so I'm very concerned, you know. Oh, I think the fall of Bloodshot, if I'm not mistaken. I'm really concerned what's going on. And they had a really weird way of revealing that, because right after that, they revealed, or not revealed, but they revisited the announcement about Exo Manowar's wedding, which was in like a month before that. So, you know, they got some really good stuff coming up.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. All right. Well, I did manage to get a few interviews. I talked to Dustin Nguyen about the project he's working on with Jeff Lemire, Descender.
Oh, okay.
He said they have...
I didn't get mine signed, by the way.
You forgot, or
what? I didn't even take it.
Oh.
It's okay. He'll probably be at Long Beach or something.
Yeah. He said that he's currently working on issue 4. Jeff's currently scripting issue 24.
Wow. Okay. So, no delays there.
Yeah, for some reason I thought the book was only going to be like a 6 issue. I don't know why, where I got that idea. But yeah, they're in it for a long haul.
It doesn't really seem like it'd be a long book, but, you know, now that you're saying 24, I'm a little concerned.
So, I got to interview Dustin. And I should say that I will have an episode up soon that has all these interviews from WonderCon. It'll just be a big, long episode with nothing but these interviews. And then after Dustin, I believe I talked to Kevin McGuire.
Okay.
And then after Kevin McGuire, we talked to Tom King, writer for Grayson and the upcoming Omega Men. And he also gave me a copy of his book, his novel.
Oh, did he?
A Once Crowded Sky. And I actually started reading it a little bit at breakfast on Sunday morning, and by page 8, I was totally hooked.
Really? I thought about picking it up.
Did he tell you what it was about?
No.
So basically, it's a superhero universe, and there's some huge threat that is threatening to destroy the whole world. It's called The Blue. And so one of the heroes takes it upon himself to sacrifice himself to destroy The Blue, or push The Blue back, or end the threat of The Blue. And he does that by apparently absorbs the energy of the other heroes, so they no longer have powers.
Oh, well.
And then he goes and he himself is destroyed, but it stops the threat of The Blue. But there was one guy that didn't answer the call for some reason or another. So he's still in that world. And he's like the only one left that has powers. But some of the other heroes are still trying to fight crime and so on and so forth, but they don't have any powers.
Oh, wow. That sounds
so that's where you get the title. It was A Once Crowded Sky. You know, the sky was once filled with heroes. And so, yeah, by page 8, I was like hooked. Because the one guy, he still has powers and he feels guilty, and there's all kinds of... So, yeah. Just really seems really, really, really good. I'm on page, I haven't had a lot of time to read because I've been packing, but I'm on like page 30.
And it sounds pretty good.
It's pretty strong. So after talked to Tom King, we talked to Cullen Bunn.
Yes, Cullen Bunn.
Go ahead, what were you going to say?
Oh, no, nothing.
We also talked to Dan Juergens.
Yes,
we did. We had a really good interview with Dan Juergens,
and he was working on an awesome Superman commission.
Yeah.
And you just look at it, and you just say, that's definitely worth $125. I mean, it was super detailed. No pun intended.
And then I also talked to Greg Pak. I mean, I would have loved to have talked to Fred Van Lente, but like I said, I couldn't find him. I would have loved to talk to Babs Tarr, but her line was just too long. So I talked to Greg Pak. I talked to Dustin Nguyen. I talked to Kevin McGuire, Tom King, Dan Juergens, and Cullen Bunn. And then I also talked to a girl named Sarah Beitley. She has a creator-owned book called Pimp Killa.
Pimp Killa.
Pimp Killa. She was fun, again, very enthusiastic about her book, so that was a lot of fun. So like I said, I'll be playing all those interviews for you guys in an upcoming special show here on the podcast. And I would say, yeah, that interview with Dan Juergens was really cool. I mean, all the interviews were really good.
Yeah, Tom King was very eccentric.
Yeah, Tom King's a blast.
He was cool.
If you haven't had a chance to meet Tom King, if he's at a show, yeah, go up, say hi. He likes to crack jokes. Guy used to work for the CIA. Very talented writer.
Pick up his book, apparently.
Yeah, his book is solid. I'll be reviewing that on an upcoming episode of my video blog on YouTube. So be sure and keep an eye out for that.
We also, my wife and I, we went to the Gotham Q&A panel in the arena, which was packed. That was really cool. They showed a 7-minute preview of the next episode, and then they were just talking about their experience with the show. And apparently in the near future, probably for season 2, they're going to introduce Victor Freeze. They're going to introduce the guy who ends up being the Mad Hatter. I can't remember his name. And the guy who's going to end up being Clayface. I can't remember their names, their real character names. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I could have done with another half a day or maybe a full day. Well, I only did about half a day.
Yeah, it seems like it.
That would have been nice to do a few more interviews, and it would have been nice just to you know, hang around the Valiant booth a little more. I did get a chance to say hi to Matt Hawkins.
I didn't. The line was too long, and we had to. We were going to the Gotham
panel. Gotham panel, yeah. When you texted me, were you right there at the booth?
We were right there, yeah. And then it was moving, and we were like fourth in line. So I was like, okay. And this guy opens up his portfolio, and I'm like, okay, this is not gonna happen. So you know,
because I got there about 10 minutes after you texted me, maybe 15, and there was nobody there. He was just standing there.
Oh man.
Yeah, Matt was only there for an hour on Saturday.
Yeah, because he was taking off to Dubai. Like what? Yeah. Hours later.
Yeah, him and his new bride. Going to the Mideast Comic Con, which I think he said it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but they were basically getting there on Monday. It's 11 hours ahead of our time and 14 hours flight time.
That's ridiculous. So
I think they were leaving either late Saturday night or very early Sunday morning, basically getting there Monday. So they had the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday to kind of sightsee, and then he was doing the convention. He told me some interesting story. Well, a couple interesting stories about the last time he was there in 2008. And then he mentioned the last time he was there about how he just went wandering off, into the side streets. You know, it's kind of like Tijuana. You know, if you're a tourist, especially if you're a white tourist, you're supposed to stay on the main strip,
yeah, okay.
You know, that's populated and well lit and, you know, more secure. And last time he just went wandering off into the neighborhoods. He said he would definitely not do that this time. You know, tensions between the U.S. and the Middle East, or Americans and the Middle East, are a lot more tense now, I guess you'd say. So that was interesting. And what else did I do? I guess that's about it. You know, saw some old friends, saw some creators I knew, talked to Todd and Don Knock for a little bit. Talked to Norm Ratman, of course. I had to say hi to him. Talked to Richard Friend.
Norm had some good stories about Mexico.
Yeah.
Yeah, because on Long Beach, when he did my Black Manta sketch, he was telling us that he was wrapping up the Flash, and that he was going to be heading over to Mexico for the convention out there. And he was telling me that he goes, after that convention, that his ego, you know, grew because the people out there were so appreciative. Yeah. And he said they were bringing old beat up comics to get signed, and that his line, he said it was all day. He turned to his interpreter and said, "Hey, so when does this line end?" And his interpreter said, "All day." I thought it's gonna be so. He said it was really nice to, you know, that he would do it again, and that I guess there's another show sometime soon, or for maybe next year, that Todd Knock's gonna do the show in Mexico. He was telling me that as well. So it was nice to have a little chat with him. That was kind of cool. That's a show that, you know, that's an international show I'd want to go to. But it seems like it'd be ridiculously
packed. Yeah, I don't know that I'd want to fight those crowds. I mean, it'd be cool to see everybody so excited, but then I don't even speak Spanish. At least you'd have that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you'd have that going for you. But yeah, it was good to talk to Norm. We talked a little bit about how awesome Flash 40 was, and how excited I was that the dream team is still together on that book. You know, you still got Venditti writing it, and Venditti and Van Jensen both as co-writers on the book. You still got Brett Booth on pencils. You still got Norm Ratman on inks. You still got Andrew Dahlhaus doing the colors. I mean, you know, I was telling him, that's one of the best books DC's putting out. I don't hear a lot of people talking about it.
You know,
but he said that they have noticed an uptick in sales since the Flash TV show.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. I just hadn't got to it. I think I'm on issue 20. So he's not even back in the Speed Force yet. That's how far back I am. So I need to catch up. But yeah, then 40, again, I need to do that.
40 was awesome. He did show me, he had some pages there, some original art pages. He showed me the new costume. We talked a little bit about the differences. And, yeah, man, I wish he didn't charge quite so much for his pages though, man. There's a few of those pages I'd love to have. There's a double page spread in the issue 40. The layout is just super cool. It's just awesome. But I didn't even look to see how much the price. I know he had the page there because I saw it, but I didn't even look or ask him about the price because I knew it was going to be just ridiculous. So here, let me see if I can find it real fast. I'll show it to you. But I talked to Todd and Don Knock. They were, you know, having a super busy show. Also talked to Richard Friend and talked to Dinesh.
Did you ask Friend about the Wonder Woman costume?
No, I didn't. He's not on Wonder Woman anymore.
Oh, no?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's not. We did talk about that, but nothing I can really repeat.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, all in all, a great show.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Did you get any commissions?
I didn't. You know, I just wasn't there long enough. Maybe if I had gone, you know, right up to somebody right when I got there. But I just, you know, I didn't have time, and it was more important to me to get some interviews set up.
All right, that's it for the first half of the episode. The second half will be out on Wednesday. And as I said before, it talks a lot about the books coming out this summer that Manny and I are really excited about. So join us then.